Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Osio Ginalii Tohiju Toigu, which means, hello cousins, I'm fine, how are you? This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau in east central Tennessee, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the old Cherokee Nation.
Well, hello everybody, this is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from Hooker County in the mysterious Ozarks in Mid-America, and our guest this week is Huna Lani from the Huna Institute at access-huna.com. Is that correct, Lani?
That's right.
Okay. And now, Lani, Huna Lani was a student of Max Freedom Long. And is that the correct way to force a student to address you, Huna Lani?
Word for any minister or priest or reverend in our language would be kahuna.
Okay, so
it's the same as in Hawaiian language, which is different than ours sometimes. And all these throughout the 11 or 12 tribes of Polynesia with little differences in emphasis. But kahuna lani would be my formal. That way you're like saying, well, Dr. Lani all the time. So just say Lani.
Okay.
That'd be fine.
So we call you Kahuna once, and after that, Lani. Okay.
That's right.
Okay. A lot of
and that just means I'm ordained by a state-chartered church ordination.
Now, you're, and for the folks that want to email you, you were at, what was your email address?
Lani, L-A-N-I, at Huna, H-U-N-A, institute.org.
.org. And also there, we've got Ke'ona'ona, And maybe later on, you know, the women are always the power. Maybe we can get her to come on. My sweetie Betty, I think in the last year has been on for 2 or 3 minutes. So, but anyway, tell the folks a little bit about yourself and how you found your way to Hoonah and when all that happened and how you got to where you are today.
Well, in 1962, right after graduation from high school, I was a very odd person. That's a lot of teenagers are. And one of Max's books, Secret Science of Nine Miracles, materialized in our bookcase in my parents' house. And for a number of years, I kept on telling myself it was a coincidence, but I asked my mother and father and sister and all the relatives that would ever came over to the house, and not one person had ever heard of that book before.
Huh.
So it just appeared there one day.
I'll be darned.
And I was so in need. I felt like something had gone wrong with our civilization, and that people who were telling me what they believed to be the truth just didn't know it. I didn't know what it was, but I felt that something was really wrong. And then Secret Science by Miracles filled that gap for me. And for the first time in my life, I wrote the author, Einstein Long, and my mother intercepted it, his return letter, because she thought it might be a cult. And so she opened up his response, which was really kind of sweet, and had his home number. So she phoned him, and over the years they had a marvelous independent relationship. And she immediately gave, after she talked to him, gave me the letter, and we started correspondence.
Wow.
And she and he decided that I was so in difficulty because of my adolescence, that I would not go full-time into Hoonah even if I wanted to until 1968. Give me some time to play around with it before committing it. And by 1968, I was in Max's front room in Vista, California, a little bit of San Diego. He adopted me gymnastically into his lineage and ordained me as a kahuna of Hoonah. And I've been a kahuna ever since, since 1968.
Well, I'll be darned. So at age, you were ordained at age what?
Well, so I was born in 44.
Okay, so you're 60.
Huh?
You're 60 or some odd.
Yeah. So, you know, that's so strange. I was like in my early 20s, I guess.
26, I guess you were.
Yeah. And so here I am, at 60, and you turn around and look around behind you, and you have a history. I didn't know that. I don't feel like that. I feel like I'm still 25, getting me in trouble.
Me too. That's the problem is I'm 50 and I'm still trying to do stuff that I did when I was 25, and all of a sudden I need it now.
Oh, well, I'm a little different. I'm trying to do the stuff I didn't do when I was 25. Well, you know, the Hoonah belief that we're here to get into trouble and get into as much mischief as possible and then figure a way out of it. That's the way we grow into picking me a new angelic being. And I'm a Kua. And it takes about 60 lifetimes. And then bang, you're different. You don't have to pay the rent or go in the bathroom anymore.
Well, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry. I'm just so anxious to hear more. So I'm just going to ask you a couple of questions and just let you ramble.
Basically, I'm good at rambling.
Basically, I know the folks would like to know what Hoonah is, and of course that that's probably a question that would probably take them 20 years to answer, but you can go over the highlights and tell us a little bit about spirit says you ought to tell us.
Well, okay, there's like, well, I'm not going to count them because I always count wrong. I always say, now the next four points, and I get to 17, and then I say, whoops. So anyway, Huna is about, it's a religion, like a tribal religion, like Navajo would be, is there Navajo religion? I don't know. Anyway, Huna is a thing. Whatever it is, I don't know. And it is a way of understanding the world and being here in the world. And so the first thing is the theology, which is that all of us, all life in the world, start off as being the one God, which you call Oyayo. But I only call him Oyayo basically to annoy people who have a name for their God and look down on me if I didn't. Because Oyayo really means fundamental truth. But anyway, so there was a, in the beginning, before the beginning, the Kaoli step, the step before the first step, there was Oyayo, consciousness. And then consciousness was like bored and not too bright. And so he created the created world and then populated it with aspects of his own soul, which are all of us. So I recognize, Luat, I recognize the people who hate me or the people who love me as my God, my same as me. But we're all on different paths at the moment and for the next 75 billion years or so. Then we all get back into one. So our business here in this lifetime is to purify us, which purifies God, and have a good time to appreciate things. How about the party from Luau?
Uh-huh.
So Huna, a Hunian is a cheerful warrior and a party animal, sort of combined. And so we try to make life more imbalanced so that there's more time to be a warrior and defending others and a time for party down and for loving others and to reduce the middle ground that you and I and everybody else spend most of our lives in just the day-to-day activities. So that's one thing, is to recognize joy and to appreciate creation and to love the people we love, and then also to do our duty when we find it, and to be honorable and to develop nobility of soul. So that's the first square of theology, which is that you and I and every person listening, as far as I'm listening, is on the way to evolution into being an angelic being, guardian angel, as we call the Beyond the Spirit. And it takes about 60 lifetimes, unless you're in a fast-track religion. Huna is one of them, but there's lots of others. So I basically like all religions, except those who don't like me, and then I don't like them. I mean, I like
them. At least right now.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And so the means of my duty, for example, for me, is basically in, I'm not going to remember the areas because I always screw that up. One is to make the ki'i kukui, which are the kukui tree is a tree in the South Pacific and in the Philippines and India. And when I bless the nuts, which are polished, when I bless them and they're white or striped or light brown and give them to somebody, then they turn black on the person. And when he or she touches another's wound or sickness, it's almost always instantly healed. And it doesn't make any difference if the person I give it to knows about me or Huna or whatever their religious path is on. Doesn't make any difference if they know me or Huna. Usually, These healings are happening all around the world. Somebody just falls down or gets an accident. A stranger will come up and say, do you mind if I try to do something? And usually if they're bleeding, they'll say, sure, go ahead. And they'll touch them with this walnut-shaped seed. And instantly, it's healed. Doesn't make any difference what religion they are. And the other person, being healed, doesn't know them, doesn't know me, doesn't know him, because it's a gift from God. So it's everybody's God. It's the Yayo. It's coming through Huna in the sense that your Panasonic recorder might have been made by a Buddhist or something. So it takes a kahuna to make a Kiki Kukui, but the Kiki Kukui can be used by anybody. In fact, anybody just can go to the website and ask me, email me and ask me for one, and we can make arrangements with them together. Another thing is Kalo cards. Kahuna Nui Max Rin Long taught me how to communicate with Amakuas through poker cards or tarot cards. To do readings with them, but in a different way than gypsies or whatever other schools are. And so Kuna Kiana, after taking several classes from me, created that as an online course for anybody who wants to study it. And dang nabbit, if people who don't take the course, the cards no longer fall at random, but make actual sentences from their Amakuas then.
Oh my gosh.
And the third thing we do is every year, one of the Huna holidays set up by Kuna Nui Max was Makahiki, which is the celebration of a year returning. It's not a new year. We don't see New Year's. We see the old year returning every, like an old friend returning, not like somebody new. And that's done with the sound greeting chant that another Kuna in my line, Kuna Fred Kimball, created, and that's done at the dawn, and then later on that night we had all sorts of makiki games and ceremonies, and then we have the formal Ava ceremony, which is the sacramental to scare everybody. It's listed as a drug, but it's not like a drug. Well, it's known in Fiji, Tahiti is Kava Kava. It's available at the most health food stores, just so we drink a lot of it at the formal ceremony. And then we do an actual fire walk where people with naked bare feet walk on a fire when I talk Kanona, the setting in the backyard on fire every year. She's very patient with me. And so people, strangers off the street, anybody, whether they are calling out in the heart to Jesus or Muhammad or Allah or Buddha, I don't care. Because from my point of view, everything that's sacred has to do with the Amakua, even if they don't know it. And so anybody can be called by whatever they think is, by whatever divinity is within them, even if they're atheists or agnostics, as long as they believe in power of good somehow, walk naked on the fire. And I've walked 20 or 30 times over these glowing coals, which is scary as all get out. And one time I broke the kapu, the rules that everyone has to follow, that you walk in humility, that you walk for yourself and your deity, not to impress anybody. So I broke two of those. Those are the two I broke. I was trying to impress a friend who was there at that office, a big kahuna, you know. And burned, third-degree burns on me. And that put me in the second plateau of firewalking. Which is you firewalk. I've walked, 10 or 15 times in perfect safety, as everybody does. I'm the only one at all the firewalks we've had that has been severely burned. And then it's at that second stage, after you get through weeks of agonizing, walk, because firewalk burn you right where you step, on your feet. disorder. And the second plateau is, are you ever going to have faith again in your Amitru, in the fire? Are you ever going to walk again? And I did, and it's been so sweet.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Friends, this is Will Bluewater. Would you think twice about defending yourself or a loved one from an intruder? In this day and age, would you dream of leaving your doors unlocked at night for fear of being burglarized or even attacked or worse? Would you? But when it comes to our own bodies, the doors to our houses are wide open all the time. The very air we breathe and the food we eat, especially here in the United States, creates free radicals that cause us to age and in some cases cause illness, some of which are deadly. Now, for the first time in history, there's a supplement called Protandim that is listed on the U.S. government's PubMed.gov website with many peer-reviewed studies all showing that Protandim is a proven killer of the free radicals that are aging and in some cases even killing us. Now, I'm not talking about killing one molecule of free radical per one molecule of antioxidants like the stuff we've been taking. I'm talking about killing 1 million free radicals per second, per molecule, and this is the very same antioxidant your own body produces. Protandim supercharges your body to create much more than it does without Protandim. There's an old saying that we are warned about in the scriptures. That's the attitude, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. So let me ask you, how much money do you spend on food a day? If you're out shopping or at the beach, would you think anything of spending a buck or even more on a can of soda? If there was a vending machine that sold something that killed what was aging you or even killing you, would you even hesitate to spend a buck and a half a day? Well, now there is such a vending machine, and it's sitting right in front of you. It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Hi, friends. This is Will Bluewater. I have a message here from 1975 from John Wayne. It comes right out of today's headlines. So you Indian folks who are following the progressive trend in politics, you're following the people that supported slavery. You're following the people that have enslaved you ever since the Civil War. Listen to John Wayne.
You know, it's a funny thing, the Indians now, this AIM group have started something that now they're against me for some reason, but I am the only man in pictures that always gave them their human dignity. I never was in a picture. I never allowed myself at any time to do anything that would take their human dignity away from them, and that to me is the most important thing in a man. I have found that a certain type that calls himself a liberal, and I always thought I was a liberal. I came up terribly surprised one time when I found that I was a right-wing conservative extremist. When I have listened to everybody's point of view that I ever met, and then decide how I should feel. I mean, but this so-called new liberal group, Jesus, they never listen to your point of view, and they make a decision as to what you think, and they're articulate enough and in control of enough of the press to force that image out for the average person. For some reason, maybe it's these pictures, they have not been able to do that with me. In spite of what they say, people have not taken sides that I'm it hasn't affected my career in popularity, let's say. In spite of the fact that they've tried to make it do it. There isn't a hell of a lot that we can do to change human behavior. you keep making laws to try and change human behavior, you can't do it. I think you can accept it and feel how you would feel in that situation. You're being conned into Keynesianism and socialism now. But it isn't going to stop the selfishness of human behavior. It isn't going to stop the greed. If you take $20 and give a dollar to every son of a bitch in a room, and come back a year later, one of the bastards will have most of the money. I mean, it's just human nature, and you're not gonna whip it with a lot of laws. I think when you make people conscious, as communication gets better, and you make people conscious of somebody in trouble, starving or something like that, the average person will help. But of course now they've got so damn many charities and there's so much professionalism, you know, if you have a charity, you hire some professionals to work up the charity, and by the time you get the money, you get $4 for the recipient and $400 for the administrators. So, I mean, Christ, I think there are people who try to affect a thinking where they know more than some other son of a bitch and try to put a false impression on what human nature is. Christ's sakes, we have proven that we go back to hope at the first opportunity. Just throw out a little fish and bam, they're out there ready to grab it. So we are optimistic. We have to be optimistic. Christ, what else would there be in life if you lose optimism?
The boy amateur, Greg Gilder, the amateurs that are the founders of Hunnit, are just having my life this week. And I just want to share that with everybody. Maxie and Long went to the islands, got tricked into going to the islands by miraculous stuff, just like I came to Una in a miraculous way. Just like his initiator, his person that adopted him into the genealogy, Gunanui Williams Brigham, was also tricked into going to the islands in 1872. And so William Tell Spring only had one student or hamana, and that was Gunanui Max. And in 1936, Gunanui Max came over back to the mainland and Laguna Beach and moved in all of them. And he had two wives at the time, and the Depression was on, and he owned a small print shop. And that wasn't hardly enough to pay the rent. So he decided to write about his religious notion, where he had become adopted. But there wasn't a name that what Brigham had given him. So he picked out a name, a word from a language that was little spoken and had no religious connotations at all, which was Una, which means dust secret or secrets, and it means dust or dust-like particles. Common word in all the Polynesian tongues, common word in Hawaiian. No religious connotations at all. It was just his way of having a name for his particular teaching. And then a number of geniuses were also called by their Amakua to come in, and almost all of them was created by them. Gunanui Max created the basic theology, but like the dawn greeting was created by Gunanui Fred Kimball, who was a friend of his, and all the practices of Luna come from the Luna Kupuna, the elders of Luna, who were all basically white folk. So we have a relationship to Polynesia and Hawaii, the same as Christianity has a relationship to Judaism, which is that if you watch the funeral of the Pope, the cardinals all wear a yarmulke. You know, so that's like giving a nod and a smile to the Jewish tradition. But at the same time, the Pope would not consider himself an Orthodox Jew. And most Orthodox Jews would not consider the Pope to be a Jew. So, Christianity is based on Judaism to some extent, but has its own history now. And likewise, Huna is based on Hawaiian. Hawaiian religions basically are called Ho'omana, and not called Huna. But a lot of people, because of Max's book, nobody would know what they're talking about if they said Ho'omana. So people are saying that they do Huna, and they mix things up and stuff. I'm basically your Orthodox, hard-nosed, Orthodox Christian. It's not as known as that as the Baptist, you know. So you can't believe me entirely. That's the way it makes everyone do it. Everybody walks their own path. And Luna believes that everybody is doing great. But we're all working out the evil inside of ourselves. So everybody is evil too. You are, I am. And what we call evil, what the Christians call evil, we call the will to win at any cost. The will to power. And what the Christian theologists call the good, we call the will to serve. So that nobility in each person's soul is the will to serve in some way. And the will and evil in each person's soul is the desire to win without reference to service. And when that happens, that stuff happens. But that's all God working out is his own evil, so that at the end of the created world, Lapanai, when everything returns back to the one, God has been purified by us. So whether or not you know it or anybody else knows it, everyone is it's just God working out his own evil and making mistakes along the way and getting better all the time. And that's how I feel about it. Everybody, including the Pope. So the Pope is practicing Huna in a very odd way to me. Every religion is Huna, and every person who lives in everything that's alive is Huna, including the grass and trees and swamp moss. And I think that's the end of my lecture on beginning Huna.
So basically, a practitioner is a person that has his very own religion, because he'll take say what Max and you would teach him, and then he would add to it. It sounds like some of the other Huna teachers have done the same. They've revealed just different. Is it kind of like several blind people trying to describe an elephant, where some of them would describe an elephant is like a tree trunk, and another would say, no, an elephant's like a rope. And another one would step in the dung and say, no, an elephant is poop. You know, is it kind of like that, or is it that Huna was like the old adage about a horse that was designed by a committee and ends up looking like a camel? Couple of rhetorical questions.
The first answer, there's several answers that probably contradict each other, which is normal for our human lives here. The first is that anybody who's doing any good or living and trying to do better and live a good life, they've got my support. And anybody who's trying to be stupid doesn't have my support, but my appreciation that eventually will get it. So anyone who's doing anything good, that's fine by me. Second question, the second answer is the opposite, which is that Huna is a trade name for Kununui Max's religious teachings. And those people who were taught by him, which would be his direct successors, the Huna Kapuna, and myself and the other people who he actually taught. So that there was a feeling, I don't know how you say it, a style that one gets from actually being at the feet of the person who's teaching, who is at the feet of the person who's teaching before that. So that my personal relationship and adoption by Max is important to me. And that Max was actually adopted by Brigham is important to Max. And that Brigham was adopted by the last of the three firewalking Bakuna for white. So that I would say that there is a lineage which is purposeful and important. I had a talk with George Kingwood, and I said I didn't have anything against what he was teaching. In fact, his teachings could be, all of them could be benign, and if they help a person to live a better life, then golly, I'm in support of that. He just shouldn't call it Huna. He should call it Surgism or something like that, because they weren't Huna. And then we had a big argument about linguistics. Because the word Huna in English cannot be spoken in Hawaiian. It's, the word Huna in Hawaiian means trust. And that's what it means. It doesn't mean religion. If you meant the religious teaching next to long, it would have to be Ohuna. Because O means what follows is a proper noun. It's the name of the thing. So
in Hawaii, the old religion, did you say it was called Mona?
Oh, okay. There's a letter in the alphabet of the Hawaiian language which does not exist in English called the Okina. The Okina is a break in the voice. And there's one word in the English that uses the Okina would be the word oh-oh. Oh, or a yo-yo, or something like that. So it's a break in the voice. So it's ho-oh, ho-oh, mana. Ho-oh, mana.
Ho-oh, mana.
Ho-oh, mana, yeah. And that, ho-oh, mana means any, ho-oh, mana means religion in Hawaiian. And ho-oh, mana would be a specific religion called the Ho'omana, but there is a name, so the native practices would be called Ho'omana. Maxfield Long's stuff would be called Huna. But there's been a fuzzing out or hazing out of things. And the trouble is that people who go into other stuff called Huna and then reject it, think they're rejecting Huna, but they may have never encountered it. The firewalk, psychometric analysis, heat, GUI healing, the color reading, they have many things that we do. The language, the Hunian language, which is different than Hawaiian, but has been worked on through three generations. We started to work. The Huna language, Hunian, was the same as the archaic Hawaiian language spoken in 1872. But the English, for example, spoken in 1872, isn't the English of today. If you read the actual writings of people from 1872 in English, it's not the way it's expressed in today's English. So in 1872, Kanui William Thomas Brigham, when he created a new, under the auspices of Buamakua, the great guild, the company of angelic beings who created it, and tricked everybody. Okay, there's two things. There's one thing, is that I see things differently than a lot of other people, And how they speak is, they're speaking the truth as they know it, and I speak the truth as I know it. So then the truth as I know it, and other people who disagree who are honorable people. The Puyamaku, the great guild of angelic beings, created Hunan and tricked William Tell Springham into coming to the island, and tricked Max Streamlong into coming to the island, and tricked me to coming to Max through materialization. So all the long time, there has, the real founders of Huna is a specific guild of angelic beings, or guardian angel, or Amakut. And in 1872, William S. Brigham began to change the Hawaiian language to reflect the theology that was being taught to him through life and through his experiences as presented to him by Puyamaku. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, Hawaiians in 1872, that language was also continuing to change. Nowadays, there's a militant Hawaiian movement that's trying to change Hawaiian language radically into the sort of Tahitian with the addition of K's and R's. And Hunian is very different from that. Hunian words and ideas are very different. And yet, if I were to say, speak a sentence in Hunian, most Hawaiians could understand it, but not the way that we do. So like, for example, the word Amakua, which is so important in Hunian in theology, means angelic being. Means what you are to become. What you, Blue Water, will become in this lifetime after you die, or a few lifetimes after that. The great awakening you'll have as an angelic being, a deity, minor deity. Whereas in old Hawaii, there were only four Amakuas. Four. That's it. Amakua, to a native Hawaiian of 1872, meant a family god or a house god, and there were only four of them. And they were hereditary, and you didn't choose them. You either had Mano, the shark god, or you had Hueo, the owl god, or you had Mo'o, lizard god, and you had, I think it was called Ahi. I may be wrong on that, but the heel. So there were only four Amakuas to the ancient Hawaiians. But there are about 2 or 3 billion to the Hunians. So if a person doesn't get deeply into what Max is actually teaching, then he doesn't really know a lot about Huna. So then they add things. And I just wish they would change the name to, just like I changed the name a little bit from Huna to Hunian, so that other people could still use Huna. I don't know. I'm done.
Well, now, shortly after you met Max and were, or not too many years after that, I understand you ended up with Frank Fulsgrove. Want to tell folks about that?
Max died in 1971, and Huna just broke. I was having all kinds of things, visitations by deities, if you want to believe that, and all sorts of supernatural stuff, and I was fighting cults of darkness and protecting people that people were trying to kill, and doing exorcisms, which we call kalos, and all sorts of things like that. And I had no one to back me up. When Max died, the HRA, the Inner Circle of Hunan, died with him. And so I was basically on my own. And one of my friends was a close associate of the great medicine man, Frank Fulsgrove. And they were talking about me all the time, and I didn't know it. And so finally, Frank Fulsgrove wanted to become my, I don't know how you say it, not my friend, not my mentor, but guardian, I could.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals. And, you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken-tasting
right.
garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff. And I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed. It's convenient. Stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable. It's convenient. It tastes really good. Taste the peaches. They're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like dehydrated. And freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now.
Put it
Osmond.
Under your bed. Put it in your closet. Give it for Christmas to people and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osmond, great having you on.
It's
the Wise
so fun
Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. This is a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
So that when these strange things have happened to me, I would always, since I'm sane, I would always think that I was crazy. So then I'd communicate to him exactly what had happened, and he would do a pipe ceremony for me, and he would write back to whether or not I had a true experience or not. And they were always true. And he respected my path in the new tribe, the new sort of white tribe. Anybody can join the whole world, but Max is white, and I'm a white boy from L.A., so what are you going to do? But Huna is a new tribe. Not Hawaiian, not Polynesian, except maybe it is derived from it. And Pine Falls Crow appreciated my walking in sacred manner as well as I could. And so he never wanted me to follow the medicine ways, but I was very familiar with them. I was a singer, and I danced Rocky Boy, which is a northern blend style. And at one point, really strange, so I'll just tell you, because I don't know, you got this out or keep it in whatever you want to do. But there came a time when he asked me if I was willing to fight in a battle he was having. And it seemed really strange because here I was, this funky, more or less adolescent, old baby kahuna. And so I had to think about it, because what I figured was that anything that he couldn't handle easily, I'd just die at. So he was essentially asking me if I was going to come up the pine race and die. And I thought about it, I said, okay. Because I was young and who cares. So I thought, as soon as I said it, I was willing to do anything I could, but that I probably couldn't do a whole lot except deflect their attention for about a few minutes until they had taken care of me. I never heard from them again on it. So I guess he handled it all by himself. But it was really a startling moment for me. I really had to consider myself of where I wanted my path of service to be, or devotion. would I be willing to die for somebody? And the question, I guess, was, yeah, but I didn't want to. But if somebody, here I am at 60, and put on firewalks and walk people across the fire, and objects turn colors when I bless them, and all that kind of stuff, and I still consider Frank Fool's Crow to be far greater than I am. And at that point, I considered him, everybody has their own scoreboard, I don't mind. But for my scoreboard, at the time, when Max is dead, Frank Fool's Crow was the most holy person in the world, as far as I'm concerned. And I just hope the walking donkey sets it in. Do whatever they're supposed to do.
So you were up there during the, were you up there during the siege at Wounded Knee?
Oh, you want to get into that.
If you want to. Before we do that, do you need to take a break?
No, that's all right. I was like, there's like, four levels of, tribalism. There's like people who used to be in tribes at one time that are now acclimatized to being a regular person in the regular culture. Then there's a next level in that are dancers and singers and have gone to powwows and have reservation ties, still have people that they know in the reservation. And then a deeper in there are the Indians that are very concerned about Indians staying in their own tribes. And, but not always, okay, and then further in, there are the center of what's left of the culture. The, medicine men and medicine women and tribal elders and stuff. And so I was in like, I had friends that were in that third circle. So, when Wounded Knee was taken over, I don't know. I think you know. I think you smile. Because you start off as in paternalistic societies like we're in, all paternalistic societies that I've ever known are really run by the women. So all the tribal societies I've ever been into, the drama is conducted by the men. And all the real stuff goes on behind the scenes by the women. And tribal stuff, from where I've been, is always as gossipy as can be concerned. So my internal friends from Pine Ridge were telling me about Wounded Knee, what had happened. And it was quite different than what come out in sort of the white thing, because the Pine Ridge Sioux did not like what was happening. And either died because I was on Frank Fool's Crow's side. I mean, I'm just, I don't have any reason to have a opinion one way or the other. But since I had relationship with Frank Fool's Crow, I took his lead. So if he was in trouble, then so was I. And as far as that is concerned. So, the old man and old woman who owned the trading post that Wounded Knee were critical to Pine Ridge with their absolute minimum poverty level economy. All the women would feed hair decorations and moccasins and knife sheaths all winter long, and the men would tie roaches all winter long, and then sell them to Wounded Knee in the spring. So that was what a lot of them, that was the whole economy for a lot of the families. And so when AIM decided to take over Wounded Knee, they tried to get the Sioux involved, and the Sioux refused. So then they brought in enemy people. And so then, I think his name was George Wheeler, was the chief of the Pine Ridge tribal council. And so once Wundanu was taken over, he decided that he was going to deputize as many Sioux warriors as he needed, go in and take over the drain boats and take the Aayan people out and dispatch them.
Vicki Wilson, right.
And so then the FBI heard about that, so they arrested him and put him in protective custody, which ended the Sioux ability to react against him. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, I'm told, the old man who owned Wimini train boats had a heart attack. And the FBI, which had surrounded the place, would not let anybody in. And so Frank Fullsgrove managed to sneak in to work a healing on the old man. And then when he left the train boat, he was arrested by the FBI for being a part of the revolution. And so it got all twisted. The Blue Otter, I don't know. All I know is I don't like people who are mean. So if AIM people are mean, I don't like them. If the FBI people are mean, I don't like them. If there are good AIM and good FBI people, and there are, then I like them. And I just think that, golly, we should, isn't there enough work to do on our own internal dialogue to keep us busy? I mean, we don't have to hurt other people.
It's true. I know Grandfather Rolling Thunder was my one of my first teachers, and he knew Daddy Bray, and I guess Daddy Bray died about the time you met Max. Had you ever heard of Daddy Bray?
Oh, sure. Daddy Bray was innocently involved with some of the Unfocusing of Huna and to become Ho'omana. He came out to the United States to visit Max, and so he came into Max's home and visited. And they sat down and talked about the old days and Hawaiian stuff, and they both decided that they were, the other person was totally mad. And after they had decided that the other person had valid experiences, were valid but mistaken, Big Daddy Bray and Max said they had a great time after that. The first time was to establish that they were both real, which they did. And then they established that they were both nuts, which they did. Then they could have a good time. And Big Daddy Bray chanted a blessing on Max's house when he left. But also he told Max that he was marketing, or that's what we would say now, I don't know what they would call it. But he was describing his, Eric Gray was describing some of the stuff he did as Huna, because Max had opened a market for something called Huna. And so from his view, from Max's viewpoint, that was okay. Nowadays it's sort of an acid corrupting the more orthodox teaching.
Right.
But yeah, Max and Big Daddy Bray, as well, it's like Frank Fullsgrove and I walked on different paths, but we still respected each other utterly. And so Max and Big Daddy Bray respected each other. And my medicine friends who dealt with Frank Fullsgrove, who live in California, also were friends of Rolling Thunder. And I heard Rolling Thunder on the radio. He was on shows, interviews many times. I heard him. Never met him, but he was Frank Fullsgrove, or at least his representatives in California, would actually recommend people with problems, if they were too busy, they would recommend them to Rolling Thunder, because medicine people out here respected the Yuwipi, respected the work of Rolling Thunder. So
back then, at least they did. Now, nowadays, it's funny that now that he's well, that's some things that happened because of a few people in AIM. And the really the funny thing about the funny thing about how all that got rolling is that there were some rules that were written down and signed by three people, and one of those people has since broken those rules himself, and it's just so weird. It's all about control and power, and or you know what you'd call evil, and it's unfortunate. Did you ever meet Mad Bear Anderson?
No, I never heard of that.
Yeah, Mad Bear was he was from back in New York and was a friend of Rolling Thunders. And yeah, I grew up in I was born in Minnesota, but I moved to Santa Monica in '61 or '2, and then.
Well, I was there at that point.
Oh, I'll be darned. I was.
Did you ever go to the Elysian Alcala?
No, I'm 10 years younger, so I was in like first or second grade, and after fifth grade, you know, moved down to Newport Beach and was there for sixth grade, and then my dad was an aerospace engineer, so we had to move, and Nixon pulled the plug on aerospace, and then we moved back in about 76, and we were in Laguna Hills, so real close to Laguna, so I'm familiar with the culture down there. It's a really, California is a really unique place, especially the Pottery Shack.
When I would be going to Powell's Elysian Park in Burbank, one of my friends that was the head singer of the Northern Drum, had Northern and Southern Drum there. The Southern Drum was Francis Sweetwater, and the Northern Drum, my friend, was Pete Looking Horse. And his son was about my age. And when I was going there, shortly after Hamness started, this Indian kid was totally drunk and chose me out because I was going in there to dance Rocky Boy. And he was all bitter because I'd stolen his songs because I was a singer. And I'd stolen his dance. And I happened to pass by the beaten looking horse's son. And his son drugged me back in there and wouldn't let all the Indians do it to stop talking. Because I was protected then by Pete Looking Horse's Drum. And, but I got inside and I really feel someone, I don't know who, because I feel like the hearts of these people, most of them, not all, were turned by people who were trying to lead them astray. The teenager who chose me out could not sing, could not dance, got drunk all the time, and resented me because I could sing and dance. And yet, I had worked at it to learn how to sing, to learn how to dance, not any singing. And he could have, too. Or he could have been, he could have asked me, and I could have showed him around, and the Indians or whites or whoever he wanted, who could have showed him how to dance and sing or whatever he wanted to do. So his bitterness, his desire for activity was twisted by someone else into easier. It's easier to sit on a wall drunk and attack somebody else for stealing something that you could do. But it's harder for you to do it, yeah?
Yep.
But I still think that that you could... There were 37,000 Sioux in L.A. when I was there, and maybe 100 or 200 once a month at Elysian Park, and dancing. So that's not really a large percentage.
Uh-huh.
And there were lots of times... when there'd be Indians that doing blanket dances that were being put on by their families, and they couldn't dance. They could step more or less in time with the drum, and but they'd be having blanket dances because they were going off to war, and they'd be dancing in their army outfits or their marine outfits, and so then they go around a couple times and anybody can join and throw money in the blanket to give them the money for whatever they need to have a good time, to have a going to a party, or whatever.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It's the little yellow pill that scientists say could eliminate chronic diseases and help you live well into your hundreds.
You might be able to increase the lifespan of a mammal by 50%. And, of course, if that was a human being, then that might be in the order of 130 to 150 years.
That claim might be hard to swallow. But tonight on ABC's Primetime Live, co-anchor John Quinones takes the promising antioxidant therapy called Protandim.
I have become a guinea pig for ABC News in primetime. It's not a drug. It's a supplement. It's called Protandim, and it's a combination of five exotic plants that have been around for centuries.
Have you discovered the fountain of youth?
I wouldn't put it that way, but we may have discovered something that will tell us a lot more about how we age, what happens biochemically, and maybe how we can slow it down.
Quinones has been taking Protandim for 2 weeks now and tells Extra,
I am sleeping better. I feel a lot better and also energized when I do wake up.
Primetime puts Protandim to the test tonight.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
So I just feel the whole thing got really nuts. And except for those few people, I think there were lots of Indian people who wanted something good to happen and took the easy way out of blame the victim and hating people. And the hard way out was to sit at a drum for a couple of years, which is what I had to do in order to learn how to sing. But they didn't know. And so, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a mixed bag. Well, you really had a rich cultural experience. Were you born in California?
Yeah, I was an L.A. boy, living up here in the Frisco area for the last 20 years and probably moving down to L.A. as soon as possible, spending the rest of my life there. I'm going to end up being like one of those 1875 people that never got out, lived and died within 25 miles of each other. I'll probably end up back at Covina.
Oh, Covina, huh? Yeah, I had a girl. Had a girlfriend there once. So I remember Covina. It's a nice town. It's a way kind of on the outskirts of L.A.
26 miles.
Well, I know a few years ago there was a real resurgence. Was even news coverage about people that were firewalking from all walks of life. How do you account for that?
There are two ways to account for that. The paranoid, schizophrenic, delusions of grandeur way. The real way. The real way is, I don't know. Now, to go in the more interesting way, when Luna was founded in the crucible of firewalk, when William does bring a firewalk over luminescent lava, under the protection of the three firewalk kahunas who initiated. So he became a firewalker. Then he died, and then he took on Max, but it didn't occur to him how important the firewalk was. And then the Poyamakuas stamped their foot, so then there's only two firewalk priests left in all of Polynesia. By 1940. So they arranged, none of them were in Hawaii. They arranged to have a, Kunekiwunki, a firewalk priest, come in from, the Society Islands, which I think is a part of Tahiti, and, do firewalks at the University of Honolulu, University of Hawaii in Manoa. And, one of our members was there to become initiated, and return to firewalk. So the angelic host Well, and who is really demanding that Huna, the firewalk, return to Huna. And so he did all the, our guy did all the promotion, publicity, was adopted into the family of firewalkers and started to be training. Then the old firewalker died, and our guy, having missed the boat, so to speak, never firewalked again as far as they may know. And then, so in 1968, Max had hungered for the firewalk to return. Fire made sacred to return to Una. So I promised him that I would do that just before he ordained me. Not as a condition of ordainment, but just as what I promised. And then I was hunting for somebody to initiate me. Found somebody, was initiated along with Kiyonana. Talked her into spending her vacation walking on the fire, which is, and broke the glass, and, which is so thrilling. And then I performed the first firewalk on the Huna Makahiki on the same day as the sky dwelling fell from the sky. As a blue star and a huge trembling sound in the ground shook in Tahiti, and a myrrh fell from the sky as a bright blue star. And later that evening, I did the firewalk on the same day that the last of the Hopi prophecies were fulfilled. And there was no choice. From 1968 on, every time I performed the Makahiki, I left a space for the firewalk. So there was no... In 1968, the date, March 21st, was set for the firewalk, but it didn't happen until 2000. And so the date, my date for the setting of it was set in concrete 30 years before it happened. And there it was with the final prophecy of the Hopi streaking over my head. The way from Tahiti to San Francisco. Didn't make it here. I thought for sure there was going to land in my backyard. I mean, it's, since it didn't, who knows? I don't have any little broken off pieces of the final plaque of the Hopi. I just want to give them over for you.
You're not the true, don't claim to be the true white brother then, huh?
Well, you never can tell, but as of today, no, I don't, no. You never can tell, I mean.
Don't have the corner yet. Well.
I don't have it yet, no.
If you'd have been from east of Arizona, yeah, you might have started to qualify because you definitely have a religion that's all your own. And that's one of the qualifications. And,
well, no.
Does Huna have anything to do with the color red?
Yes.
Please.
Sure. Red is a sacred color for us. And all of our objects are wrapped in red yarn, red wool cloth, or red tissue paper. And we consider it to be the red path, a path of blood, path of the jihad within ourselves. The work that you allow of ourselves here.
And for those folks that don't know about the prophecy of the true white brother is what we're talking about. And, well, it's certainly...
By the way, I don't have my own religion. My religion was given to me by my kapuna, my elder. So there's a book being written on the Ki Kukui healing. And... Probably notified on my website, on the Huna Church's website, within a year or so.
Oh, great.
And, but the difficulty we had, I'm sure he's going to really love hearing me mention dirty laundry that we never talk about. And that is that he wrote a wonderful introduction. It just wasn't the creation story told to me by my kapuna, those very logical and comes from the islands. And now the book reflects a teaching from my kupuna, Kununui Maxtri and Long. And it's not because I think it's provable. It's not because it's logical. It's because of what my kupuna taught me. And then, so that's one of my hands and reaching into the past. Then the hand reaching into the future, when I bless, say, a sacred tea leaves, they turn color to dark green and they don't turn brown. And when I bless kukui nuts, they change color to black, no matter what color I bless them at. And when they touch other people, they heal. And in fact, in three different cases, all around the world, three different people reported the bloody wounds were healed to the extent that there was no scar. There was blood all over them, blood all over the person healed, blood all over the floor, and no place where to come out of. And that was in three different people, four different occasions. But it's not, you know, it's not the normal thing. The normal thing is that the moment the ki kukui touches a wound anywhere in the world, the pain ceases and the bleeding ceases. And so I would say, from my point of view, if that stops, then I have somehow misunderstood the nature of reality and my relationship, my dealing with the deities that exist. And as long as that happens, as long as wood changes color when I bless it, that must mean I got something right. And
well, that's even better than noni juice.
I've tried noni juice, and it tastes like dusty grape juice. It's not prune juice. It's not bad. I've never had any terrific results. I've had some terrific results on my throat, because it probably sounds to you like I'm a little bit hoarse.
Uh-huh.
And I'm really not. The doctor shoved a TV camera in there, and one of my vocal cords, out of the two, that has become paralyzed.
Huh.
And they have no idea why. They put me through every test in the world, and Luna has no idea why. All we know is that it just got weird one day.
Ew.
I woke up, and now I've been taking this stuff that Kianona sells, that she got from Kumupaku, the firewalk leader, called Monotech, and my voice is coming back.
Great.
So, because normally it would sound like I was just breathing air at this lengthy conversation we've had so far. So, but otherwise, I don't know.
Well,
I've got
another friend up in Washington that has a similar problem, they just don't understand why. I mean, sometimes she can barely speak above a whisper, and but it's interesting that there have been quite a few holy people who have had problems with speech, or have had there's something called the sacred limp. They've either limped or have had a problem with speech. It could be a sign, or just something that's given to you that is sacred. You know, it could be coming from your angelic protectors.
Well, it did. I was at the time I was teaching. I have a standalone church in Luna. So I was preaching all the time, just like I'm doing now. I was preaching all the time, and what was that getting me? I mean, I would talk in the, whatever I said, just the spirit in the walls, and, you know, people would be saying, oh, this should be tape recorded, and I would never get around to it. And all this stuff, I've had a lot of It's like what you said. For me, I just live my life, and I just lived it, and that's the way it is. I don't think it's special. When I compare it, were I to compare it, then it would be, I had a lot of advantages that others haven't had. And then all of a sudden, I was struck, and so I had to go to the internet, and I had to start writing, because I couldn't talk.
Uh-huh.
And I was praying, and my uncle would say, well, you know, maybe you should prepare things to kick the bucket, because you're going to die 100 years now or tomorrow afternoon, who knows. But if you kick the bucket holding all these secrets inside of you, then the threads are lost.
Right.
And so I agree with you. So I came to find peace with it, but it's nice to be able to talk again. And to me, it could be that, as you say, it could be that I stepped out of the path and didn't realize it, that my Amakua sort of had to slap me on the nose to get me to go the right direction again.
Yeah, I believe Moses had to have a spokesman. And it's prophesied that there will be a man like unto Moses, and that he will also need a spokesman. And there have been other biblical teachers that had speech impediments. I can't remember who they were. And as I recall, Cocopelli had a birth defect or a limp, and that there are other sacred characters that have come and gone that have had, you know, either a limp or a problem with speech. And so, yeah, I wasn't thinking it was because you stepped out of line.
And well, between you and me in the gatehouse, I'm only trying to do the best I can do. I'm just trying to walk the... make my life as meaningful as possible, like almost everybody else. If I'm some sort of, if somebody biographer makes me into some religious sacred person 150 years after I'm dead, fine by me. But there came a time when dogs and people started spontaneously to bow to me. Well, I thought that was weird.
Huh.
And even some of the great kahunas of Hawaii. And so I had to sit myself down and have a long talk with myself about that. And my own puppies, my losses, would kneel to me and stuff. Not trained, just, oh goodness. So then I had to come to an understanding that it was a response to something divine in them, that they were reacting to, that they perceived correctly or incorrectly in me. And it didn't have anything to do with me. It was had to do with their own divinity. So then I felt like it was okay for me to accept it, so long as I realized that I was stupid and insecure. And that as long as I was humble and didn't expect or demand it, but accepted it, then fine. So if somebody waves to me on the street, I'll wave back or nod my head. But I don't think I'm worthy of it. I think that anybody who thought they were worthy of it would not be worthy of it.
Well, that,
people who don't think they're worthy of it probably aren't.
That's excellent advice for anybody. Especially the more respected you become. That's the only way to look at things. Because you get a big head and it's all over with. You've lost all of your growth.
Precisely. Growth and with growth. Growth towards your own amakua, towards your own graduation, the next stage of life. Exactly so. You're a very wise man.
Well, don't say that. I might start believing it.
No, don't believe it.
Now, you mentioned Ke Ona Ona. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. With Would she be interested in coming on and saying a few words to the folks?
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
It is so great to have our friend Marie Osmond back here on GMA, and she has some important information about making sure your family is prepared for natural disaster. She's the new national spokesperson for Wise Company, which makes dehydrated and freeze-dried emergency foods and food storage products. She's here to tell us about that. Marie, you've been given the opportunity to endorse probably 9 billion things over the course of your career.
True.
Why the Wise Company?
The reason I wanted to do it is because it's affordable. You can eat a meal for a dollar. It's less than school lunch. It's affordable, but really, look at what's been going on with Sandy and Katrina. I mean, what was it, $78 billion of damage done just here in New York and
right.
New Jersey.
So what is this?
What it is it's emergency meals, and you know, it's not your grandmother's kind, not the beans and rice and the gross chicken-tasting garbage. This is lasagna and really good stuff, and I swear to you, why am I here talking about this? Because I know it's going to save thousands and thousands and thousands of lives. You put it under your bed, it's convenient, stick it in your closet. If something happens, I have it in my car. All you do is you open it and you add water. You don't even have to add hot water.
Right.
And it's affordable, it's convenient, it tastes really good. Taste the peaches, they're fantastic.
This is a peach?
But they're different than every other company because it's like dehydrated. And freeze-dried, and they combine whatever. I swear it's fantastic. Just try it.
I'm trying it right now, Marie
Osmond.
Put it
under your bed, put it in your closet, give it for Christmas to people, and save lives.
Thank you very much. Will you tell Donnie that we said we hope his rear feels better?
Well, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but I'll tell him.
No, Marie Osmond, great having you on.
It's
the Wise Company.
To be here.
Great to be with you.
It's always fun to be here. It's a great place.
All right.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you'd like to find out more about Wise Foods, visit wisefoods.org.
She had to go pick up.
Oh, I heard her hang up. I'm sorry. Tell her I'm sorry.
He was at the beauty parlor for doggies, and he really enjoys that. So she had to pick him up. She might be, when she gets back here, if we're still on, I'll let her know that you're inviting her.
Oh, yeah.
She's been studying with me for 14 years.
I know she picked up the phone, and I said something about her, but I didn't know she was going to be running off, or I would have said something sooner. But,
sorry.
So you have
the interview over, and we've only done. I thought we were going to be enough for the 14 days or so.
Oh no, you can talk as long as you want to. I didn't. I was just going to give you an excuse to get it if you felt like. But if you want to continue teaching, please go right ahead. I basically kind of ran out of questions.
Okay, then there's two things. One is that everyone is a part of the God. Everyone is God. And therefore, everyone is immortal in the consciousness while being mortal in the flesh, and they're here to work out things. And that first thing I would want to tell everybody, whether they believe me or not, especially if they believe me, is that they are immortal and they're doing just fine. They cannot get lost, that there is a will for the life, but it is only that they live their life as well as they know how. That's it. You cannot take the wrong path. You can just take a path that's faster or slower.
Well, I hate to cut this short, but I've had something come up and I need to go. But we could sure do another interview sometime very soon if you'd like, okay? All right?
Sure. All right, dude.
Thanks a lot, Alani. And yeah, I just had a, we got a big project going on here and our car's broken down. The fellow that's, it just came, I just heard him drive up that's helping us with that. So I'll, we want to invite folks to come to your website and donate to you and ask for a Kukui Nuts. And it's thanks for being on the show, Lonnie.
That's right. Be grateful, be happy, be safe, and get a Kukui and do healings and learn the Kalo and talk to your God.
Aloha.
Aloha. Thank you for it.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Bye-bye.
I'll see you.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
There is a growing movement of people who are deciding to make their lives better. At LifeVantage, we're in the business of change, of improving quality of life globally and restoring the ability to make dreams a reality. Your quest for personal fulfillment begins here. Our flagship product, Protandem, the Nrf2 Synergizer, is the key to fighting oxidative stress. This daily supplement, comprised of natural ingredients, activates the body's antioxidant enzymes to eliminate free radicals, which cause oxidative stress. Protandem has been tested in the laboratories of renowned universities, such as The Ohio State University, LSU, and the University of Colorado, Denver. These studies found on PubMed.gov, the U.S. government's online scientific library, clinically show that Protandem reduces oxidative stress.
When I saw that Protandem reduces oxidative stress by 40% in 30 days, I was all in for the rest of my life.
Everyone begs us for science as an industry. Where's your proof? Well, we have that also.
LifeVantage is devoted to advancing Nrf2 science and leading the fight against oxidative stress.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now. Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. This station's only means of support is through donations and purchases of the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library, which includes lifetime online access to a printable 1,000-page intelligence briefing and a worldwide indigenous prophecy encyclopedia. Now, folks, there's nothing else like this collection on the planet, all for $9.99, formerly priced at $29.99. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. It includes the Prophecy Keeper's Prepper's Self-Reliance files and all of our previous over 100 Prophecy Keepers interviews. So head on over to prophecykeepers.com right now and have a free sneak peek today of two-thirds of the Prophecy Keepers trilogy and a peek of the dashboard of the Prophecy Keepers Wisdom Treasury Vault. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
You want to get an edge on turning back the clock with just a few pills? Who doesn't? Well, it's no longer science fiction, but science possibility, a potential breakthrough. As I found out firsthand, there may be a way to erase years, at least inside my body. Granted, it's down the road, but some scientists are wondering if a new pill I took might offer a very long life.
It may not look like the Fountain of Youth, but inside this nondescript building, I'm about to become part of an exciting experiment, a kind of guinea pig.
Dr. McCord, okay.
I'm here at the University of Colorado in Denver to meet Dr. Joe McCord, a world-renowned scientist.
This is pretty exciting stuff you're finding, huh?
It is. We're very excited about it.
His latest research could very well unravel the mystery of aging itself. And his decades of experiments may have the potential of adding years to people's lives and possibly prevent chronic diseases like cancer, diabetes, and heart disease. It all centers around this small yellow pill, and for me, it begins with a blood test.
It wouldn't be the first time I've given blood for this company.
They want to check my levels of something called T-bars, which is a rough indicator of a person's actual age. T-bars can identify a condition known as oxidative stress, a kind of measure of the wear and tear on our bodies. Oxidative stress, like the rusting of an engine, is not a good thing.
Bad for the body.
Leading to disease.
Leading to disease and leading to malfunction, and importantly, leading to what we call aging. It is a slow progression of increasing oxidative stress. That's the main characteristic biochemically of the aging process.
The problem of aging begins with the very food we eat to give us energy. As our cells burn that food, they also release toxic chemicals. Those chemicals, you may know them as free radicals, react with all the components of our cells, literally bombarding them millions of times per second, damaging all our cells. The result? Oxidative stress. And we all have it. The body fights back with a system of defenses. It makes two antioxidant enzymes, catalase and SOD, whose job is to gobble up the free radicals before they can harm our cells.
So, doctor, how often do I take these?
And so, here I go. With that swallow, I've just become part of a potentially landmark scientific experiment.
Doesn't taste bad.
It's called Protandim, and tests on both mice and humans have already shown that it revs up the manufacture of those good enzymes in our bodies. More enzymes, fewer free radicals to harm us. Whether that will lead to longer life is still unknown. Experiments to see if mice live longer are about to get underway, but it's a tantalizing theory.
Right now, all we know is that this preparation decreases oxidative stress. Oxidative stress is not a disease, just like aging is not in itself a disease, but it's something that accompanies and is attached to many disease processes.
So you can see the age-related...
Normally, oxidative stress, measured by those T-bars, increases with age. But in Dr. McCord's tests, taking just one pill of Protandim a day reversed that trend for everyone at every age, even for an 80-year-old.
They all are reduced to the level of oxidative stress that one would expect, frankly, in a newborn or a very young child.
Back to the oxidative stress levels of a child? It sounds too good to be true. Will Protandim work on me?
The scientific evidence is there. The pieces seem to make sense. The question is, does this translate into something that humans can take advantage of?
And so, ancient Eastern healing and modern Western medicine may soon be working together. High oxidative stress is associated with more than aging. It's been linked to hundreds of illnesses.
It's at the very center of many diseases. Liver disease, diabetes, emphysema, asthma. I've studied all of these. Strokes, heart attacks.
Even mental disease.
Yes.
Depression?
Alzheimer's disease, depression.
Dr. James Crapo with the National Jewish Medical Center in Denver is also researching Protandim for the company.
Are you saying that this could be a cure-all?
You're looking at something that will have a small impact, but an important impact.
We make no claims about curing any disease or preventing any disease. We hope that when enough studies are done, perhaps such claims might be able to be made in the future.
Clinical studies to assess Protandim in both diabetes and heart disease should start in 3 to 4 months. But what about my progress? After nearly 2 weeks now, it's time to get my results. Dr. McCord calculates the numbers. The result? My level of oxidative stress has declined dramatically.
45%, that's excellent.
Just look at where I fall on the graph, before and after.
Which, if extrapolated back, is the level you would see in a newborn baby.
Have we turned back the clock? Well, maybe not on the outside, but deep inside, within my cells, yes, indeed.
Would you suggest I keep taking this supplement?
I would. I can't guarantee it's going to extend your life. I can't guarantee it's going to eliminate any diseases or cure any diseases.
But we do know that oxidative stress is part of those disease processes. I don't want to wait until I'm 80 years old and find out that I should have taken it.
For more, go to our website at abcnews.com.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
Major universities and government agencies initiated and continue self-funded studies following the ABC Primetime Investigative Report you just viewed that originally aired in 2005. These studies continue to reveal more scientific evidence about Protandim's unique benefits. They are published in major scientific and medical journals. The next video will bring you up to date.
Developed after 40 years of research and exclusively for LifeVantage, Protandim is a true scientific breakthrough in anti-aging. Protandim has been reported on ABC, NBC, and PBS, featured in the Wall Street Journal, and described in CNN chief medical correspondent Dr. Sanjay Gupta's book, Chasing Life, The Quest for Immortality. Protandim's creator, Dr. Joe McCord, is a world-renowned scientist and a pioneer in free radical biology. Dr. McCord is the discoverer of the key anti-aging enzyme, superoxide dismutase. His role in the discovery is so significant, the enzyme is measured in McCord units. For Dr. McCord's discovery of superoxide dismutase and his contributions in free radical biology, he was awarded the Elliott Cresson Medal. This medal is awarded to distinguished inventors and scientists, putting Dr. McCord in the same company as Pierre and Marie Curie, Alexander Graham Bell, Orville Wright, and Henry Ford. Dr. Joe McCord has devoted his life's work to the study of free radicals, their role in aging, and the many problems associated with aging. Consumers spend billions every year on antioxidants in the form of food and supplements, hoping to reduce these free radicals. But antioxidants from these sources can only eliminate one free radical for every one antioxidant molecule you consume. Protandim is scientifically proven to slow cellular damage caused by free radicals. Taking one Protandim one time per day for 30 days turns on these anti-aging enzymes in your body. Your own enzymes eliminate free radicals at a rate of 1 million to 1.
I think any other supplements that are designed to be antioxidant supplements probably are no longer needed because Protandim solves that problem in a much more effective way.
Protandim is a breakthrough poised to revolutionize the anti-aging industry. It is an entirely new and scientifically validated way to fight aging, reducing your oxidative stress levels to that of a 20-year-old after just 30 days.
We found, as many other scientists had documented, that there is a progressive increase in T-bars in your blood the older you get. When these same people took Protandim for 30 days, the age-dependent increase in lipid peroxidation was completely eliminated. After Protandim, we could no longer distinguish the 80-year-old from the 20-year-old.
Protandim is protected by three U.S. patents. Universities around the world continue to initiate and fund their own studies of Protandim and to evaluate how this anti-aging breakthrough can prevent and improve many of the hundreds of problems associated with aging.
Many academic scientists at a number of universities have begun studying Protandim because it represents a new tool. It represents a way of reducing oxidative stress that wasn't available before. There simply was not a good way of doing what Protandim does. Protandim interacts with the DNA in your cells and causes the cells to make more of a set of genes called survival genes. The ingredients in Protandim were actually selected because they are largely metabolized by the liver, which does not interfere with most prescription drugs, which are generally metabolized by the kidneys. So the general answer to that is yes, it is safe. The immediate benefits of Protandim are within several days, the biochemical markers of oxidative stress begin to decrease. And while these are immediate improvements, you may not sense that these things are happening, just as you can't sense what your cholesterol level is, if it's high or low. But nonetheless, these benefits start happening within days of taking Protandim. The advantages to taking Protandim in the long term are that it protects your body from the relentless progression of free radical damage as we age. The anti-aging aspect of Protandim is one that accumulates over time. So the longer you take it, the more protection you will sustain. Missing a dose of Protandim is not a big problem. It takes about 2 weeks for the effects to go away. So if you miss it for 2 weeks, you're pretty much back to where you started from.
It's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Good afternoon. These are on, I presume. I'd like to talk to you today, and do I have control of these slides, or is I do? Okay. Let's get through these really quick, because this is just because you have to get CMEs, and I have to tell you that I am on the Speakers Bureau for GSK, GlaxoSmithKline, and also a nutritional consultant for an HIV nutritional company named Biosource Therapeutics, which has nothing to do with what I'm talking about today. What I'd like to talk to you about is something that I find thoroughly fascinating. It is glutathione. It is one of the four endogenous antioxidants, and it is one that I must admit, despite 80,000 published articles in the English literature, through medical school, internship, residency, fellowship, and a fairly long time in academic medicine, I knew nothing about. It is a very interesting molecule because it exists in an accelerated or increased energy state. The energy state is, or increased energy state, is caused by the fact that it's got a free sulfhydryl group and therefore can easily donate the hydrogen to a electron and therefore quench a free radical. Now, let me tell you, because I think it's important, and it is a little bit of a divergence, but I learned about glutathione because of something that you probably all have seen in your practice, and that is a low uric acid. Now, when I was in medical school and when I was a professor of oncology, the only thing I knew about uric acid is when you had a kid that you were going to treat for leukemia, you put him on allopurinol to keep the uric acid down. I knew nothing about uric acid being low, except it kept appearing, and it appeared in about 20% of my patients, and that just didn't make sense. So I finally went into PubMed, and after stumbling around for a long time, I found out that uric acid is the last antioxidant your body uses when it's run out of everything else. When it's run out of gas, okay, it uses uric acid. Interesting. So if that's the last, the question then, what was the first? And that is where I got into glutathione. I've been coming to some of these meetings for a while, and glutathione is very important for a number of things, not all of which I'm going to go into today. But in point of fact, it has a great deal to do with not only well-being, okay, but aging well, or if you will, retarding the aging process. So I think it's very applicable. I'd like to, at the risk of repeating things that you already know, go over some of the things that glutathione is important about. Alone in the antioxidant world, okay, every other antioxidant, when it becomes oxidized, becomes itself a free radical. Glutathione doesn't. It actually recycles other antioxidants. In fact, the body considers it so important that up to 6% of the entire ATP expenditure or energy expenditure of the body may be used to synthesize and optimize glutathione levels. That's pretty impressive, 6% of the entire energy output of the body. It is also the only non-enzyme antioxidant that doesn't become a free radical and in fact has a very interesting corollary when it becomes oxidized, because what happens is it complexes to another spent glutathione molecule, and the compound then becomes GSSG, and GSSG has been shown in animal studies at least to promote and induce delta wave sleep. We all know the importance of that in terms of the aging process, so this, even in its used up form, functions as a very useful product. It not only functions as an antioxidant itself, but alone again in the world of antioxidants, it is an absolutely essential component of antioxidant enzymes, namely glutathione peroxidase, and most importantly, the glutathione transferases. And I bring that up because glutathione transferase abnormalities have now been associated with virtually every cancer known to man, and probably with a lot more than that. And therefore, by promoting the production of glutathione transferases through improving glutathione, we may be doing even more than I'm able to talk about right now. In addition, if that were not enough, let's keep going. It's a chelator. In fact, it's 50% as effective as oral chelation in getting rid of mercury. It has an effect on other heavy metals, but they're not as pronounced as mercury, and mercury is pretty ubiquitous in an environment, so it kind of comes as a freebie. And it detoxifies organic pollutants, perhaps the best known one of which is the two-carbon fragment that we know as alcohol. And in fact, without glutathione, you ultimately get a hangover because you stop the process at acetaldehyde, which is phase one detox, and that in itself is a free radical. And obviously, many of us may have felt the effects of that if we didn't have enough glutathione. Now, why is it important in aging? Well, these are old data, and I think they're probably not as robust as they should be, but I'll give you what is available now. Glutathione levels decrease with age. The data would suggest it's 1% a year beginning in the 20s. I think that's too little, too late, but that's only my opinion right now. I haven't proved it. There are some very interesting things, though. Age-matched normals, okay, reveal that anybody at, say, 45 who's had his first heart attack or has asthma or whatever other disease you want to use has a lower glutathione level than somebody of that age who's well. So disease causes decrease in glutathione and an accelerated decrease compared to normals. Glutathione happens to be, and this is perhaps the take-home message, it's the major protector of mitochondrial DNA. Mitochondrial DNA is that DNA within the cells that's responsible, if you will, for the electron transport chain that produces every bit of energy in your body. And we know from pathologic data that if you take a biopsy from a 90-year-old and compare it to a biopsy in a 5-year-old, the mitochondrial DNA in the 90-year-old is only 5% normal compared to the 5-year-old. So obviously we destroy our mitochondrial DNA, we destroy our energy, and we age. Maintenance of normal mitochondrial DNA is directly correlated, and it's got an R value above 9.9, with aging. So the higher your glutathione, the less you age. And I think
it's at www.defendyourownbody.com. That's defendyourownbody.com. Visit us now.
of other times, let the wind blow. Let the truth be known to all mankind again. Prophecy keeper, prophecy keeper.
Let the truth be.